Mysterious Circumstances is an American Crimecast production. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey everybody, this is Justin from Mysterious Circumstances Podcast, and I'm happy to say that I am back after a couple month break. I can honestly admit it was kind of nice having a little bit of a break, but you know, under the circumstances, it kind of sucked, but I'm happy to be back, and the outpouring of support that I got from you guys was fucking amazing. The emails and the messages, Facebook page has been blowing up. I'm finally on Twitter. Everything's been really, really cool, and we have a really good show for you today. And I say we because for this case, I've actually enlisted the help of my friend Greg, because this is a pretty big case. And just for the record, this case is dedicated to Tanya, who is from around the area down in Arkansas, where this occurred. She is going through some medical stuff right now, and I kind of pushed her request to the front because of that, you know, help with the recovery and stuff. She requested it. I told her I'd move it to the front just because of the time frame factor, and I hope everything's going good for you, Tanya, and I hope you enjoy this episode. I do gotta give a couple shout outs. I mean, the emails I gotta say, you know, thanks for contacting me, Ellie, from England. Of course, Nicole is always on the Facebook page making some comments. I know she's excited for the episode too, and Dana, she's on there waiting for the episode. Everybody's been beating me up pretty good. The next episode, I'll definitely give out more acknowledgments, read some reviews, and I mean, the amount of emails I have gotten in my absence and show of support, and you know, you guys as the listeners, you know, telling me you'll wait for me, it was really awesome. There's no other two ways about saying that. It just made me realize that how much you guys actually like this show, and you know, I do it for you, so I appreciate it. But on with the case. Today we're going to be talking about a case that is commonly referred to as Boys on the Tracks. So, on August 23rd, 1987, 16-year-old Don Henry and 17-year-old Kevin Ives of Arkansas were hit by a train. Now, what makes this case really, really interesting is the circumstances surrounding it and the fact that this is right by Mena, Arkansas. And for those of you not familiar with Mena, Arkansas, it is basically looked at as a drug smuggling and money drop point for the CIA and the Medellin cartel out of Mexico. Or no, Mexico would be Colombia, I would suppose. But it was a pretty huge deal back in the 80s. A lot of shit went down. A lot of conspiracy theories surrounding this. Gun running. Definitely had Governor Bill Clinton supposedly involved in this. But here is basically what happened. And I am a little bit out of practice, so bear with me on this episode. So on Saturday night, August 22nd, Don and Kevin are hanging out with some friends at a local hangout. Everybody's hanging out, probably drinking some beers, probably smoking a little bit of weed too, whatever, you know. They are teenagers. At around midnight, they leave all their friends and they head to Don's parents' house. And what the boys are going to do is they're going to go out and go spotlighting, which for those of you who are not familiar with spotlighting, you grab some spotlights, a couple rifles, you shine the light in whatever you're hunting's eyes, and then you proceed to shoot them. It is a form of hunting, and yes, I believe it is illegal in Arkansas as well. But, you know, that really never stops anybody. Does it, Greg?
No.
Yeah. All right. So, they leave Don's dad's house at about 12:15 a.m. on August 23rd to head to their favorite hunting spot, which is a railroad track that runs behind Don's dad's house. So what pretty much happens from here on we have certain facts and then we have controversy, because from this point on until 4 a.m., nobody really knows what happened. All we have are facts at about coming into about 4 a.m. On August 23rd, 1987, a Union Pacific train was heading north with three crew members. We had a conductor, an engineer, and a brakeman. As they are heading towards Alexander, which is roughly about 25 miles north of Little Rock, Arkansas, this train crests Bryant's Hill, which is located, I believe, in between Alexander and Bryant, Arkansas, and it started making their descent a little bit down down below. Well, they passed a crossing, and they approach a small little trestle over what's called Crooked Creek. The facts of the train are it's traveling at about 52 miles an hour. I believe the train is right around a mile long. I know it had at least 35 cars attached to it, and it's going 52 miles an hour. Now, and this is the early morning hours. This is a little bit after 4 a.m. in the morning. What happens is the crew members see a dark spot on the rails ahead of them. Now, all three of these guys are looking at the spot trying to figure out what it is. So when they're about 100 yards away, it all dawned on them pretty much at the same time, from what I understand, that what they are actually seeing is two bodies and a rifle laying on the tracks. Now, supposedly these two boys are all also covered by a pale green tarp from waist to knee. Personally, I don't know how you can see 100 yards ahead going 52 miles an hour on a train at like 4 a.m. You would think it would be kind of dark outside. You know what I mean? That, you know, that's a little odd to me. But all three men actually agreed on that, so there's no really conflicting stories. They actually all had the exact same story. Now, the engineer hits the emergency brake of the train. Now, the boys' bodies are laying with their heads against the west rail, facing up, with their feet against, laying over the east rail. Both had their arms by their sides, laying parallel across the tracks, obviously, like I said. The main engineer actually said he was blowing the whistle, he hit the brakes, and this thing, I mean, it's a 6,000-ton train. So it actually took about a half a mile for it to even come to a full stop. While he's blowing the whistle, he stated that neither boy even moved. Never opened their eyes, didn't move a muscle. They just laid there. They actually didn't, you know, see the train run over these two young gentlemen. But they did say that they actually had felt it. So when the train actually stops about a half mile down the tracks, the emergency brake actually kicked in, and you know, you got 6,000 tons going over 50 miles an hour. Sorry for all you metric fans out there. I really didn't bother converting all the math right there, but here's where shit gets a little bit interesting. About 35 cars back, the three guys from the train, when it does stop, they get out. They walk 35 cars back, and they found the first body part. The remaining body parts were strewn over a quarter mile area. That is pretty graphic. I did not look at any crime scene photos, nor did I really want to be perfectly honest with you. It is stated that the two men that did actually go back and look, they said the blood did not look right. They said it looked a lot darker than fresh blood ought to be, which is an extremely interesting little fact, and that'll definitely play a role later. Now, the Saline County Sheriff's Department arrived at the scene at about 4:40 a.m., which is about 13 minutes after the crew actually reported the collision. Now, Deputy Chuck Talent and Lieutenant Ray Richmond were the responding officers. Now, despite the crew's information that they actually told the cops, the deputies insisted on treating the scene as if it were an accident scene. The conductor, whose name was Tomlin, he actually actually observed, he was like, he said the, you know, one boy was not moving. He said maybe two. He's like, you know, I have some trouble with that because they are freaking blowing the horn and trains are loud even without horns. So if these boys were, you know, maybe passed out, taking a nap on the fucking train tracks, which probably no, not many people do. What do you think, you know? It just, it doesn't add up. Now, a couple hours earlier, there's an Arkansas State Trooper named Wayne Lanehart. Had it actually investigated a report of two gunshots in the area and had found nothing. He also responded to the train collision site and was also quite surprised that the two deputies really didn't even consider the possibility of any foul play. And he actually had mentioned, the state trooper had mentioned, you know, to the deputies that, you know, he didn't think the deaths were an accident. He didn't understand how the two deputies could just naturally assume that it was an accident. The EMTs who responded on the scene actually agreed with this. They actually stated that the color of the blood and internal organs had suggested that the boys had died much sooner than what was originally reported. Take a drink of my beer here. Now, Lieutenant Richmond said to treat the deaths as a traffic accident. Now, per Arizona state law, traffic accidents require no autopsy whatsoever. So the bodies were sent to the funeral home. Now, within a couple hours, the deputy actually changed his mind and had them sent to the state crime lab, where Fami Malik ruled the cause of death accident or suicide due to marijuana use. He would state that the boys had smoked roughly 20 marijuana cigarettes, which for you laymans out there would be 20 joints, and said that they had passed out pretty conveniently right there on the tracks and did not ever wake up. Now, there is actually quite a few witnesses to what happens here. One of them being named Ronnie Godwin. He said he was going home from a local nightclub, he said he was passing a grocery store and saw two police officers beating up two boys. So instead of driving by, he actually pulled behind a row of cargo trailers and watched. He said that the officers just beat the hell out of these kids and finally threw the boys in the back of an unmarked police vehicle and drove up to a dead-end road to what they refer to as Alexander Mountain. He knew that they would have to come back out, so he actually stayed there and waited about 15 minutes or so, and the officers returned and drove off in the direction of the railroad tracks. Now, Mr. Godwin actually refused to confirm or deny the identities of the officers as Kirk Lane and Jay Campbell, and he actually will not to this day comment at all about any of this. Now, another witness, and he was only known as Jerry, saw the exact same scene that night. He reported it to the sheriff's department. He was actually immediately arrested for failure to pay child support, held for 90 days, and then released and told to leave town, which he did. I'm not too sure what really happened to him. Some of these witnesses and stuff like that, like this case was playing a little bit hell to research, and I didn't want to get too far off the subject. After the initial medical exam, the Arkansas State Medical Examiner did his initial, well, quote-unquote, investigation, because we're going to go into some facts about old Fami Malik here, because this dude is a fucking character. Basically, the parents were not happy with this. Linda Ives, who was Kevin's mother, was extremely disappointed in the lack of investigation in this case, and I could not, I mean, you gotta agree with the woman. There was, within a couple minutes, they dubbed it an accident, no autopsy, whatever else. So about 5 months after, the families decide to hold a press conference, and they're basically pushing to get the case reopened. They end up having the bodies exhumed. There's a pathologist, an actual very, very highly regarded pathologist from Atlanta by the name of Dr. Joseph Burton. Joseph Burton actually did an autopsy on the bodies, and what he found was that Kevin Ives and Don Henry were more than likely killed before they were placed on the tracks. One of the gentlemen had a stab wound in the back. I heard various reports on whether it was one stab wound or a couple. It was just one?
Just one.
Okay, that's what I read. In another website, I read more than one, but I'd read...
Multiple,
yeah. And the other young gentleman actually had his skull fractured in what they assumed was from the butt of a rifle. Now, like we were talking about, you know, we'll get into some of the theories here in a little bit. But after that, they basically said that it's more than likely a probable homicide. So going from there, the families are now actually pretty convinced that something's going on. Linda Ives kept trying to contact the FBI to have the case reopened some more. She actually got the FBI to reopen the case in June of 1994. And on November 29th, 1995, she was actually told that there was no evidence, and I quote, no evidence that any crime had been committed. So it was the end of story as far as law enforcement is concerned. Now, judging from the pathologist from Atlanta, who actually had six other pathologists around the country look at these wounds, and they all agreed that the boys were definitely murdered before they were placed on the tracks. Because, I mean, even then, the shit doesn't make sense. Why are you going to get really, really high and just take a fucking nap on some train tracks? I mean, I don't get it. Now, there's a lot of shady stuff going around this area at this point in time, and, you know, we will discuss that in the facts and theories sections. The cops, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about Mena, Arkansas being a CIA drug cartel drop point where there's money, lots of drugs. Like I said, we will get into that a little bit later. And like I said, sorry, excuse me for not having a good flow of the show. I've been out of practice for a couple months. What we're actually going to get in here too is we're going to talk a little bit about the state medical examiner, Fehmi Malik. This guy is a freaking piece of work. Some of his claims to fame are in 1985. A man was shot four times in the chest. Fehmi Malik ruled that one a suicide. In 1986, a body was found in a lake with a bullet wound in the head. Fehmi Malik ruled that one an accidental drowning. 1992, a body came about and was found with five bullet wounds. Fehmi Malik ruled that one a suicide. And date unknown, a man named James Milan was actually found decapitated, and Fehmi Malik ruled that he had died from an ulcer. You know what I mean? The sad thing about Fehmi Malik is that he only answered to one person in Arkansas. And this is a proven fact. The one person that he answered to was, at the time, Governor Bill Clinton. There's a lot of speculation out there about Fehmi Malik probably having some dirt on him. You know, we don't know that for sure. We all know the Clintons are some pretty fucking shady people, as are most politicians.
Now, I looked up something on that Fehmi Malik with Bill Clinton, and he actually was the pathologist for Bill Clinton's mother, who was a anesthesiologist at the hospital in Arkansas. She had, mishandled, I guess, the situation with two people. I think it was two people or one person that was, it went to court over, and he was appointed for that. And basically wrote it off as accidental death or died from some other means other than she mishandled what she did for a living. And that was Bill Clinton's mom. So
so basically Bill Clinton could be doing this guy a lot of favors, and he's doing him a lot of favors too, from what it sounds like. That's a pretty interesting fact right there. All right, now there are a lot of people who had claimed to have knowledge about these deaths. All these people have died. Almost every single person who claimed to have seen something or have knowledge about this has died. And here is the list. April of 1988, Keith Coney claimed to have knowledge of the deaths of Don and Kevin. And he was actually slashed in the neck before trying to flee on his motorcycle, and he slammed into the back of the truck and died. Boone Bearden, who was a friend of the boys, actually disappeared and his body was never found. In November of 1988, Keith McCaskill claimed to have knowledge of what happened to the boys. And this one actually was pretty weird because he actually knew his life was in danger to the point where he made his own funeral arrangements and made it a point to say goodbye to his friends and family. And he actually died from 113 stab wounds. In January of 1989, Gregory Collins claimed to have knowledge of this. He was killed before he could testify for a grand jury of a shotgun blast to the face. April of 1989, Jeff Rhodes claimed to have knowledge of this case. He was killed before he could testify. He was actually found in a city dump with a gunshot wound to the head. In July of 1989, Richard Winters claimed to have knowledge of this and was set to testify, and he was killed from a blast of a sawed-off shotgun. And in June of 1990, Jordan Kettleson claimed to have knowledge of this. He was set to testify in front of a grand jury, and he was also killed with a shotgun blast to the head. Now, the interesting thing here is we got seven deaths within 3 years of these two boys dying. So all in all, we got, you know, nine deaths right here within 3 years of a pretty small town in Arkansas, and literally no arrests have ever been made in any of these murders. And I'll be honest with you, that blows my freaking mind right there. I don't even really know what to say about all that. There's a really big dispute about the green tarp, because the three workers on the train claimed to see this tarp covering from waist to about knees. They said it was a light, pale green tarp. Now, what is weird about this is that the tarp was never found. The cops on the scene actually stated that the conductor and engineer never even mentioned that there was a tarp, and somehow this tarp actually managed to disappear before the EMTs even got there. Now, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't really think this is like a huge deal. I mean, I could see that coming around, and you know, maybe in the theory section if we're talking about, you know, doing cocaine and some money drops and all that stuff and everything like that. But at the same time, I don't feel it's very important, because given the rate of this train and the fact that it took so long for it to stop, I could see a tarp getting tangled up under some train. Ripped into shreds, you know what I mean? I personally don't think that is too big of a deal, but you guys know that I like to give you all the facts that I have. And actually, at this point, those are pretty much the entire facts that we have. I will say this, I forgot to say earlier, and you guys do know that for the most part I do an unscripted show with some notes. The actual autopsy that happened about 5 months later, when Fami Malik claimed that the boys had smoked 20 marijuana cigarettes and had fallen asleep on the tracks, the actual autopsy said that the boys did have marijuana, but it was the equivalent of 1 to 3 joints. So, at the same time, I don't even know how the hell anybody could smoke 20 joints, man. Do you?
No.
I mean, I'd be done, man. Right. I'd be done. You know,
you'd
and I'm
what,
not
fall asleep.
Yeah, I'd fucking fall asleep, but I can guarantee a train would wake my ass up, right? You know? And I'm not really trying to make light of the situation, but let's fucking get real here, people. All right. So now we're going to get into some of the facts here. And what we were talking about with the Mina connection is it's pretty well known. I mean, it's a huge conspiracy theory thing. Don't get me wrong. It's every theory is right until it's proven wrong. Now, what they say is there are some gentlemen around the Mina, Arkansas area who were laundering cocaine into the States. There is a huge drug smuggling operation. Various people are said to have been involved, including Bill Clinton and his brother Roger. There's actually a lot of witnesses about, you know, cocaine parties and, you know, straight up orgies and shit, connected with this cocaine smuggling ring. A gentleman named Barry Seal actually was supposed to be the one in charge of it. Barry Seal actually, died in, I believe, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I think it was in 94. He pretty much got shot up by a couple of cartel members. It's a pretty well-known fact that he was in the drug smuggling business and that he was controlling, basically flying in and out the drugs. Now, the extent of the people involved, there's a list too long to name because it includes a lot of members of the Arkansas political parties, and we all know politicians are pretty shady anyway, and you know, some people like to party more than others. So when you're rich and you can do whatever the hell you want and you're pretty much running the state, I mean, you know, it would make sense. Is there any other little facts that you noticed about this case, maybe, before we start jumping into some theories, man?
Not really. I mean, there's basically just one person that I
like, that you know did it, right?
It seems like it, man. There's, I'll let you get into your theory first. Right. I'm still looking up some stuff actually at the moment.
All right. Well, there's not actually too many theories about this. There's about two or three really good ones. Greg here actually does have a really good theory that he took a lot of time researching, and it's actually pretty damn good. The main theory is that the boys happened to stumble on one of the drop points at the time of one of the drug and money drops, and they were beaten and killed and placed on the railroad tracks to cover up the murders. You know, the government, you know, is trying to force feed us, you know, a lot of loose information on it. You can read a lot of stuff, but that's pretty much the main theory, is that they stumbled onto this by accident. You know, there's supposedly a man who was seen in military fatigues within about 200 yards of the actual scene of the death. This man was never located. He was seen by a couple eyewitnesses and all three men on the train. You know, that's give or take. You almost got to believe the guys on the, you know, the conductor and engineer and brakeman on the train. You know, these guys do this stuff every day. But at the same time, when you're going 52 miles an hour at 4 a.m. in the morning, I'm not going to say I can see a guy in fucking military fatigues.
Well, they, two cops also said that they were there at the railroad tracks or around the area, maybe down the tracks more. And that seeing that guy in the military fatigue that opened fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then fleed and really never seen ever since. Like, and then it gets brought up now, but like, well, there was a guy there. Like, yeah. It seems a little.
You never found him. Like, yeah. And the two cops, basically, what it was the two cops approached this man in fatigues, and as soon as they got out of the car, this man opened fire on him with an assault rifle. So as they duck for cover, this man takes off running, and he was never actually located. Depending on who these cops were, it's hard to fucking believe this shit, because a lot of the cops involved here seem pretty shady. So it's hard what to believe and what not to believe. That's my personal opinion on that. I definitely don't believe that, personally, I don't think it was an accident. I don't think these dudes got high, and especially with the evidence of the actual autopsy after the fact. There's no way. I mean, even one of the guy's shirts had a stab wound in it, it had a straight up from a military knife. Actually had a hole in the shirt, you know, and then of course the fractured skull of, you know, the other young gentleman. I'll be honest with you, I mean, that's pretty much the main facts and theories on this. There's every single witness or person to have knowledge about this was killed. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is, but Fahmy Malik is definitely a shady character, and I'm glad he doesn't work around Indiana. I'll tell you that much, man. That'd be kind of scary. But Greg's definitely got his own theory here. You want to go ahead and fill us in about that?
Yeah, I happen to come across this guy named Dan Harbin. He was a prosecutor, or a lawyer, really, at the time, a private lawyer at the time, and around the boy's death. We'll start out. Dan Harbin was a target before for at least one investigation into drug trafficking at the time of the boy's death. Harbin was... He was in prison. He was has since been in prison on federal drug and racketeering charges. He was a private lawyer in 1987. Became something of a celebrity when he became involved with this case because he was looking into it and basically kind of like bringing up his image, like trying to be like involved in this. Like he was pushing himself into it quite a bit. So he was appointed as a special prosecutor in the investigation. I don't know by who. Okay, he was appointed as a special prosecutor to investigate the case and was in charge of presenting evidence to a grand jury. Two sheriffs, Campbell and Lane, were narcotics officers looking into Harbin for his allegations of drug trafficking. When Harbin learned of the investigation, he named them as suspects to the boy's death, like saying, "Look, they're trying to push it on me. Well, why are you trying to change the story? Like I'm trying to help. I'm trying to, you know, do that," is what it seems like to me. Miss Ives says she trusted Harbin at the time, but since became suspect, and she actually thinks that he was involved in covering up the boy's death. An investigator by the name of John Brown also testified and took a handwritten statement. I don't know where he got it from. When I was looking, they didn't really say where he got that her handwritten statement from. But this is a really interesting thing. This girl by the name of Charlene Wilson, who once dated Harbin, and Harbin and these two other men that has having beat him and stabbed the boys to death before laying the bodies on the track. One of the men Wilson had named later was himself killed, and she was retracted her statement. And Wilson is actually, she was convicted of a drug offense when Harbin was county prosecutor, and she is serving now 30 years in prison. I don't know when she got sentenced for that, so I mean she's still probably there.
Never know, man.
The investigator Brown says Wilson initially confessed to having been present when the boys were killed, and that she slightly stabbed one of them while the others involved in the drug deal cheered her on. So it seems like somebody's really covering that up, because I mean I dug pretty deep to find that, and basically there's in all this stuff on this case and all the things I've looked up, I've never found that. I just actually found that today, and I thought that was a like in this guy, there's a documentary writer by name Patrick. I can't really pronounce his last name, but he got involved in the case, but he has a documentary called Clinton Chronicles about the Clintons, and then he got kind of involved in it. I don't know if he helped dig up all this information and stuff, but I don't know what you guys think, but. This guy seems pretty suspicious, and I haven't even heard anything of this Harbin since. I've still been looking up. Sorry, I couldn't find the information. If he's where he's at now, if he's dead, in prison, what?
Off the grid, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
I probably would be too, to be honest with you. But yeah, since and I mean that's the thing though. I mean that would match up with, you know, the pathologist saying that, you know, Don was stabbed beforehand. Mm-hmm. Before he was laid on the tracks, and then obviously the skull fracture of Kevin, which I can't say for sure that they know it was from the butt of a rifle, but they said the fracture actually matches the shape and, you know, the actual break of it.
And I mean, and this girl supposedly like confessed to stabbing the kids and being there. Why hasn't she been bringing up anymore? Basically, they're just like, well. You had this drug charge, we're arresting you for that, and basically she probably has no real fucking right to say anything anymore.
She probably doesn't, and at the end of the day,
and that's probably why they shut her up, but like, you're putting in prison, maybe you'll find out sometime in the news, which would be sad to say too, she might end up missing or dead also.
Yeah, well, all the people that ended up missing and dead, man.
I don't know if she's still alive right now, I mean, she's serving it, but this was an article in, I think, 99, this article came out that I read, so... Still got 16 years, 17 years since then, so I don't know where she is now or what she's doing or if she's even alive.
Yeah, and that would... I mean, it'd make a lot of sense because the whole Mina... the whole MENA conspiracy does involve the FBI, CIA, you know, drug cartels, money, drop spots. I mean, it would make a lot of sense, you know, especially a state government, you know, if they were involved in it. It's hard. Conspiracy theories are hard to deal with. I'm not going to lie to you. You can look into them all you want, but you're going to hear some people who are like, oh, yeah, you believe that? You're fucking stupid, you know? But then you got the other half that are like, everything, like, if you put it together, it just makes perfect sense, you know? So, and especially with, you know, Clinton being involved, that's always pretty interesting because, you know, he's a pretty interesting character himself. But I don't know, guys, that's pretty much all the facts and theories and a rundown of the case. Like I said, there's really not much evidence to go on because of the state of the bodies after they were hit by the train. The other autopsy that was conducted actually proved that the boys were murdered before they were laid on the tracks. And actually, in light of that, since 1995, the probable homicide cause has actually been changed to definite homicide. And there still have been absolutely no arrests made on this or any of the murders surrounding this. Now, per capita, that's a lot of deaths in 3 years, especially murders of, you know, shotgun blasts to the face and people getting stabbed 113 times. You know, there's nothing you can really do about it, I guess. You're talking about a state-run government here that's possibly involved in CIA drug drops with cartels from Colombia and Mexico. So, you know, what the hell can you do? All right, now with that being said, Greg actually dug up a little bit more information on this. What's her name, Charlene?
Charlene Wilson, obviously you know from before, she was had romantic encounters with Dan Harmon. They were dating, I guess.
Yeah, the prosecutor?
Yes, yeah. She was very into the mob, and she also hung out with, like, Bill Clinton and Bill's brother.
Roger.
Oh, yeah.
Greg's a little bit nervous, everybody. Just cut him some fucking slack.
And she actually has encounters with doing drugs with Bill Clinton, snorting cocaine, where he got so high that he was falling in a trash can. So she was... She has all these statements of, you can make those up, but I mean, from what I hear, what I've read on here, that everybody that she has told this to, and also the narcotics officer that's helping her, investigator Gene Duffy, believes every word she said. Well, she was starting to fear for her life, and same with Gene Duffy, the narcotics investigator. Gene Duffy basically disappeared, and like, because she was feared for her life, and then Dan Harmon also threatened Wilson about. Like, I told you not to talk, bitch. I'll fucking bury you. You will never be able to see the daylight again and all this stuff. So she actually, he gave her a generous offer of 116 years in prison, which he was a prosecutor on the case, but he never mentioned that they were romantically involved at one point. And so it seems like, well, she's still in prison now.
And this is the woman who supposedly stabbed this kid. Yep.
And she's actually has a son, I guess a lost son, that she's like basically trying to rectify everything she did and became very spiritual. And she's still in prison at the time, or right now, I believe, because this is also a later article, but this was a little bit before the case I told you before when the article in
99. Yeah, yeah.
But she... I'll start from there. Hold on.
Okay.
But she was offered a generous, like I said, a generous offer, 116 years, which she declined. You know, I mean, over some
because she didn't feel shit. Like she was guilty. Right?
Well, yeah, she was guilty.
Was
she freaking
guilty.
Did it, but she was trying to take it to trial. So she actually was convicted to a sentence of 31 years. And actually, Governor Mike Huckabee, who was Republican at the time, that she was in jail, wanted to actually do anything about the case and get her out of there so she can actually talk about it. Yeah. And they say every day she's in there is like closer to her being gone. Like they're basically trying to kill her, from what this seems like.
Well, I mean, if she was involved in this case and all the people that involved are already dead.
And she's still alive. She's still alive supposedly somehow. From according to this.
And supposedly she was the one who stabbed Don.
Yeah, this thing,
from what she says, I mean.
And obviously they're not going to be like, okay, well, yeah, she murdered him. Well, then she's just going to talk about all the stuff that with everybody else involved, including the higher-ups in politics and everything like that. Yeah. So basically they just sent her to jail for this prison for all these drug charges and stuff to keep her quiet. And, you know, they're probably trying to freaking get rid of her.
Oh, I'm sure they
get
are.
Get rid of her now. So they didn't want to call it a murder. They're still trying to call it an accident, you know. But it was a homicide, but they're like, not.
I mean, technically right now, like, as of this day and time, it's ruled a definite homicide. But no arrests have ever been made. But why in the hell would she say, yeah, I was the one who fucking stabbed this kid in the back.
And then she also beat him, but yeah. I mean,
and which would concur with the
and right, actually
the, you know, the skull wound that yeah. Kevin had,
which yeah, she was like I said before, the drug dealers were cheering her on when she was beating the other kids, or the two kids. But she was, like it said in this article also, at the time she was very, you know, she was probably strung out on cocaine. She was just freaking, like, I don't know how old she was at the time or anything, but, you know, she was in a bad place and with the bad people, and basically did everything that she thought, like, they want me to do this, we're going to do this. Like, she wasn't really thinking, but, like, now she's, I guess, trying to rectify everything she did, basically come out with the truth, and basically trying to reconnect with her son and try to stay alive and try to put the right people in fucking prison for this shit. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very interesting. That's actually, I'm surprised, very surprised with our system where they can't fucking get people in jail for what they really did. I mean, yeah. According to this, I mean, what we dug up, I mean, it seems like you definitely know who's involved.
But nothing's getting done about it because of the higher powers
right.
of the state and federal government. Which, I mean, at the end of the day, Greg, what is your personal, given all the evidence, which is not very much at all, and like all the listeners out there, they're used to little bit longer episodes that I usually do. But I will say this, everybody, like the lack of crime scene evidence in this case is fucking insane, all right? There's not much to go on. So basically, it's a theory. Nobody knows what happened in that 4 hours between them leaving Don's house and 4 a.m.
Yep, all theories, really.
I mean, it's all theories. But at the end of the day, given what we know, facts and theories and people involved, what do you think happened?
Oh, what I think happened? I mean, it seems pretty obvious. I mean, the kids were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Just, you know, I mean, hell, I was there at the one point. Just, I mean, I never was in that situation at the wrong place, wrong time. But, you know, they were, and it's sad to say that they got their lives taken from them over basically trying to get all the money from the for the higher ups and stuff, and just people being very negligent. And I really think it was, they, like I said, they stumbled in the wrong area, they got fucking killed over it, and the people are trying to cover up who did it. Yeah, I mean,
I actually agree with you. I think they stumbled onto some shit that they shouldn't have. Wrong place, wrong time.
I don't have any suspicion of them possibly being involved in it. Did something. You know?
I don't have any of that either. I don't see that being a possibility. I mean, they were teenage kids, and I mean, you do have the reports of eyewitnesses saying that they saw two kids getting their asses beat by some cops and thrown right. in the trunk, but they could not positively identify who those kids were. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a strange fucking coincidence, but at the end of the day, we got to go on facts.
And I mean,
if you got two separate witnesses, neither one of them can say, yeah, those were the kids.
I mean, also, dude, when I think about it, like, it's not saying, like I, it doesn't say anything that Bill Clinton and them brought up, you know, Harmon into this. I think it was basically Harmon and Wilson. It seemed like they met. Harmon was already involved in this stuff, and, you know, Bill Clinton liked to get fucking high on cocaine,
yeah.
you know? I mean,
hey.
And also was, you know, they're, I mean, all politicians.
Scarface style.
Yeah, man. I mean, he may have had a part in it because he did the cocaine and stuff, but I mean, with also that Malachi, or the Malik.
Oh, Malik. Oh, yeah, stuff. Fahmy Malik, dude. But that dude's shady as shit, and the only person he ever answered to is Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's one of the smartest fuckers on the planet, because he can do whatever he wants, or he's like the dumbest fucking medical examiner on Earth. You know what I mean?
Right.
I would assume it's probably, you know, not the latter of the two.
I mean, when you're out of life in politics, I mean, obviously, freaking, there's so many politicians out there that are so corrupt anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like basically everyone you see out there, I mean, they've got some freaking skeletons in their closet. But like I said, I don't know if Bill Clinton, like, honestly, he goes, all right, we need to kill everybody else like that. But I think it was basically really the drug cartel and cocaine, and with that Wilson lady that was doing the cocaine, she was like she said, it laid with the Dixie Mafia in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And she was just involved in, she was hung out with Bill Clinton and did some fucking coke, you know?
I mean, hell for a good time.
I mean, it's not trying to make light of it, but I mean, I don't really know really who did it and who fucking told
But I just don't understand why she would just say this shit out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you were saying she's trying to rectify her life, like, get a little penance or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Like, that would probably, you know, entail admitting of a lot of shit that she fucking did during her life to try to, you know, maybe free up her conscience a little bit.
Which I think that Harmon is definitely a prime suspect in this case. And I honestly think he was maybe head of the cartel, and then he wanted to get really into the, you know, the whole trial for it because he wanted to be in a part of it. And, you know, I mean, he was, ran freaking drug smuggling, you know, he did it with his office where he was convicted eventually.
Yeah, too.
You know, I mean, he wasn't convicted of, you know, really being involved with that, but just a, you know, being a...
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I would definitely, I gotta agree with you. I mean, you know, by no means these boys were, I don't think they were doing anything wrong. I think it was just wrong place, wrong time. And, you know, unfortunately, two young kids lost their lives. And, you know, because of greed, you know, people say money is the root of all evil, but it's actually greed, you know.
Right. I will have to say something. Thank you guys for letting me be on your on Justin's podcast here. Like you said, it was my first time. A little nervous, you know. Just trying to do my best. I mean, I did quite a bit of research, but I found the stuff that was really intriguing to me. And I mean, this case is, there's probably still a lot in this case that we haven't even really scratched the surface of. Honestly, I mean,
because here's the deal. Like, I was explaining this to him. Like, we could dig a lot deeper in this case, but it would be like a fucking 12-hour-long podcast, because it is a deep rabbit hole when you start getting into the whole MENA conspiracies.
Maybe we could get into part two, you know. If we maybe look into it a little bit more, like a quick, like, part two of a...
of the actual MENA
stuff. MENA, or, and maybe look into, you know, like I said, don't even know if Harmon's still alive and stuff like that. I mean,
fucking
what are they doing
down,
now?
Yeah. Oh, where are they now?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. All right, everybody. Well, Tanya, I hope you enjoyed your episode. Sorry it's a little bit shorter than normal, but we really didn't have much crime scene evidence to go through, and that usually takes up quite a bit of my time personally, like investigation-wise. It's basically more of a facts and theories episode, but, you know, you can find a lot of information on this case if you'd like to look into it. Everybody knows my email. It's mysteriouscircumstances99@gmail.com. Everybody can find me on Facebook. For those of you who are on the Facebook page, you already knew that Greg was going to be a part of this episode, because there was just too much time to crunch a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of people involved, and the people that are involved have a lot of shit going on. So it took a lot of research and stuff, but I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. And just for the record, I am on Twitter now. You can find me at @M_C_podcast, and it is all caps. And next episode, I will definitely read some reviews and some emails that I had gotten. you know, from the past couple months, just to give out the acknowledgments that I usually do, because I love interacting with the listeners. And I, for those of you out there who do get on the Facebook page, I'm always on there talking about shit, and I'm always replying and everything like that. So with that being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Tanya, get better, get well soon. And I suppose I'll see you guys on the flip side.